All right, so let's get it going here. This is going to be a kind of a mixing breakout, right? That's what everybody's here for. We're going to talk about mixing. I'll tell you, I like to do these things, and I know this is going to sound like a cop-out, but I promise you it's not. I try to be really nimble with these things and try to target it to issues that were going on here. I have some things that I want to show you. I have a little bit of an agenda that I want to share with you. But I also want to kind of get to the root of some problems that you might be having. You know, I got ways to show examples here and talk about certain things, the way we do certain things, mixing-wise, etc. So, we can kind of take a look at these are some of the things we could cover if you want to do it. In the granular column there, we have so we can talk about compression a little bit, gating, equalization, effects processing for vocals, processing for instruments, etc. And then we can also jump up to some not so granular topics of, and I think this is a good challenge for the churches a lot of times because the environment dictates so much of our approach. Is should we be doing sound reinforcement versus doing live sound mixing? So we could talk about that. We could talk about some console concepts. I think I probably will talk about this a little bit. You know, using subgroups versus VCAs, making sure that you all understand the differences in it. I'm going to kind of give you my approach to how I use groups and VCAs in a console. Mixing practices. We could talk about, building drum mixes, what that kind of means and looks like. Just processing practices. We could take it right down to it. And I've had many guys ask me this over the course of time. Well, it's like, well, the room's really reverberant. Should we be adding reverb to the instruments? And it's like, well, again, you're going to have to ask the question, are you in a sound reinforcement setting or are you in a live mixing setting? And, my response is always, well, do you play a CD through the PA and does it sound good? Yeah. Well, I guarantee you there's reverb and space all over that CD. Why wouldn't you want your mixes to sound like that? Right? So, if there's one common theme I see in a lot of...
I just want to say, guys, you can go up and sit in the stage area. I want everybody to come in.
Just come on in. There's plenty of room.
I didn't
want
to mess up your flow.
Yeah, it's all right.
Too many people are standing in the hall. Just come on in. Find anywhere you want to sit on the floor. Who cares? It's right in the middle of the room.
You just interrupt me anytime you want, Scott.
Hey, Robert, can I take your seat?
Yeah, sit right here. That's the hot seat, by the way. Be careful. Make sure you have your asbestos underwear on. What was I saying? What was I talking about?
Reverb.
Right. So, if there's one common theme I seem to see in a lot of churches that I go and consult for, especially when we're talking workflows and mixing, is a lack of mixing skills. Purely just mixing skills. How do I get sounds, place sounds, and am I thinking like a mixer? Right? What I see a lot in churches is a lot of what I term level management. It's not mixing. We seem to kind of strive to get this thing where all the faders kind of sit and we can kind of hear everything and then we stop. Right? Well, here's the challenge with that. You kind of get to see it in this church. You would certainly see it in the Willow Main Sanctuary, is that the imagery is huge. It's huge. We have IMAG, all of these things. We have video presentation. Visually, it's incredibly stimulating. So how do we produce audio that can keep up with that? That's a challenge, man. I'm telling you. How do we make audio that feels as intimate or as big as that big production? And I assure you, that is based in your mixing skills. Not in PA tuning, not in mic placement, although obviously they're all tied together, but in how you mix the event. Meaning when there's a solo coming, regardless of whether you fall into the model of where we have produced lighting shows, where we're going to light people when they do solos, etc., even if you have that or don't have that, you still should be thinking like a musician, right, if you're mixing music. And keep in mind, this is going to be focused primarily on mixing music, okay? When you're mixing music, your thought process can't be technical. It's got to be musical. I got to be thinking, I'm in the first verse. Okay, yeah, got that, all right? Got first chorus coming. Who's going to be in that? It's going to be these vocals, etc. Yeah, we need to make the chorus sound just a little bigger dynamically than the verse. Let's emphasize that a little bit. Okay, it's contemporary music. arrangements. Second verse, there's probably going to be some key instrument that I need to hear that's doing some little hook line. Right? Know the arrangement. Right? And accentuate those things. I would say to you, even, you know, if you were to listen to mixes, you know, from one of my shows, if you were to go hear one of my shows, and maybe Scott can talk to this a little bit, you know, if we always strive to have it feel as intimate, even though it's a big place as we can, where the audio imagery is matching the visual imagery. You know, now we have a guy's face who's, you know, 18 feet tall. If you can't hear his vocal, it just feels so disjointed, right? And matter of fact, I think you even have to exaggerate it a little bit. If you were just to record the two of us coming off the console, one of those things, the moves would feel exaggerated. It's like, wow, does that guitar solo need to be that loud? Or wow, does it need to be that loud? But put it against the visual, and it'll make sense, right? And you actually get some help with that sometimes. If you've ever mixed for television, which I have, I can tell you, or mixed for film, like for videos, it's a mind bender. It can mess with you a little bit. And the best example I can give to you, just a little bit of experience example here. In the late 80s, I mixed a bunch of live video footage for Def Leppard, and spent weeks in the studio mixing it. And this was at a time when the ability to sync video to the audio while you're mixing it was very haphazard. The video always had to be the master, so it just became laborious to sit and wait for these things to sync up and while you were mixing. So we mixed a lot of stuff offline, right? And thought we had it sounding really, really good. I mean, it was like, oh yeah, love these mixes. Lay those mixes back in against the video. Oh my gosh. When you're watching the video and listening now, it just sounded completely wrong. I mean, it's like if you see the drummer on the hi-hat or the cowbell, all of a sudden you just felt like the cowbell was just taking your head off, you know? When in fact, if you just listen to it audio-wise, you go, wow, it seems all right. But in the video, in the moment, it felt exaggerated, you know? So my point of bringing that up is you're working in that kind of environment live, right? Nothing makes me a little more crazy than to go to a show and see a guy this the entire time, you know? It's like, dude, look up. Look up. That's one of the things I like about consoles that have monitors up here is they force people to at least get it in their peripheral vision, you know, so you can see what's going on and try to match what's going on. That's your challenge. That's your challenge. Right? So, any of this that you really, anybody feel very strongly that we want to cover here? And how much time do we have, by the way? How much time are we going to be here? Sorry, how long?
Yeah,
4:45. 4:45. Oh, great. We got a good chunk of time then. So we can cover some stuff. Yeah, I mean, do you want me to kind of go down the road of live sound versus, or sound reinforcement versus live mixing? Just kind of let you into that? Because it plays right into this, guys. I mean, the church is, you know, the contemporary church right now is moving rapidly toward a model that is not sound reinforcement. Right? That's why we have drums in an aquarium. That's why we have amplifiers in isolation boxes. And, you know, really, the experience that we're building there for the congregation member is HDTV. Right? That's what it ends up being like. We end up watching video and listening to audio come from up here. And that's the reason we get rid of all those sources on the stage, because we don't want it corrupting that audio, right? We don't even pay attention to it. We just want to get rid of that audio up there. And this is my own personal diatribe now. I think what we're actually doing by doing that is disconnecting the audience from the band. When you watch CDTV or whatever it is on television of a concert, do you feel connected to the artist? And I don't. I mean, I may enjoy it. It may sound great. But it's hard to draw me in and get engaged. Right? But that's where we're heading. That seems to be the model that everybody wants. And what that does is, as a mixer, puts incredible pressure on you. Because now you're getting nothing from the stage. You have to produce the audio and make it sound produced. I mean, it needs to sound like a CD coming out of the speakers. Otherwise, people are going to say, it doesn't sound very good, it's too loud, I don't like it. Right? Unengaging. Whereas, my personal feeling on it is if we got back to a sound reinforcement model, and maybe it's some hybrid of the two, but back, especially in small rooms, I mean, this size and bigger, if we got back to a sound reinforcement model where The sounds on stage actually have meaning in the room and are reinforced by a PA system that you're actually going to draw that person into the stage, not into the speaker system. And should that not ultimately be the goal? I think it should in lifestyle. Now, obviously, if you're in an 18,000-seat hockey arena, it's very hard to draw the person in the back of the place into the stage. You know, that's why we have video support for them. But for these people that are down front, I tell you this, I've been on tours where we've completely eliminated the stage sound. And for these people sitting down here, it is a bizarre experience if the audio is not just positively stunning down front. I mean, your mind just doesn't process it. It's like, I'm looking at the guy singing, but I hear it coming from back there. What's, you know, you can't process it. It doesn't engage you. So I'm kind of a little at odds with how we're proceeding in the church world, because the engagement is such a critical piece of the whole puzzle. So that said, what I'm getting at with this is, in your church and in your application, whether it's in your youth room, your main sanctuary, wherever it's going to be, you need to make a decision pretty early in the game. Are we going to do sound enforcement here? Or are we going to do live sound mixing? Meaning we're going to rely on the speaker system for it in its entirety. Because those two approaches, those require two completely different approaches on the console. Right? And we seem to confuse it. You know, how many times have you guys run into this situation? And I'll raise my hand because I have. Got a band happening on stage. We want it to sound like big produced. We want it to sound like the CD. What do we end up doing? Using volume to try to get that, to try to eliminate that sound from the stage. Right? Everybody been there? Yeah. When in fact, really what's happening there is, if you treated that more like a sound reinforcement approach, where we're actually going to use the PA system to fill in all the holes that are missing coming off the stage, if we take that approach, and we get that PA system in time, it's a whole other animal we can talk about, but in time with those instruments, you'd be surprised how good you can get it sounding and how engaging it can be. Can you imagine going to see something like somebody like Miles Davis in the mid-60s and not have any sound coming out of his trumpet? Only coming out of the PA? Wow, would have lost a lot of its meaning, wouldn't it? Right? So my point being, you got to decide that early, because what that's going to affect on your console, if you're doing purely sound reinforcement, meaning I'm going to listen to the stage, I'm going to listen to the placement of the sounds, I'm going to try to reinforce that sound. Meaning I've got speakers up here, well, if I've got a guitar player sitting over there, well, guess what? I'm probably only going to have a little bit of the guitar player coming out of the PA over here, because I want attention drawn there. I want attention drawn to the player. I want attention drawn to the drum kit. I might spread some things out vocally. It's called localization, right? Localization. Will your church be served by that model? Because if you're not doing sound reinforcement, again, what it puts is tremendous pressure on the PA system to deliver audio to every listener, and for you to mix it like it's coming off of a pair of control room monitors, right? So that's the other piece of the question. Do you have the equipment that's going to allow you to do that? All of a sudden, it's all complicated. Robert was supposed to have the easy answer. Can't we just have it better? Yeah, better. Let's just turn that one and make it better. Right? It's a lot of thinking. It's a complex model, guys. Complex model. You guys have been to my workshops, you know I've said this a million times. Mixing and audio in general, good audio in general, is the summation of a million small moves. Whether it be them on the console, being little fixes in the PA, little adjustments to the PA, adjustments to a guitar sound, adjustment to the dynamic that the drummer is playing, all of those things are interweaved. They're all together. You can't treat the mixer as the fix-all. It's not the place for it. And for you guys that were in the main room there talking about that, that's another function of that bridge being crossed. You've got to get up on stage. You've got to have some impact on what's going on up there, because it's directly affecting how you're presenting it out there. Right? Okay? All right, so let's obviously it would make sense for us really to do a sound reinforcement demonstration here. We don't really have any secondary sources on stage. So let's talk live sound mixing. Let's just talk mixing in general. You know, we're kind of in an age now, you know, I mean, we've got incredible technology in here. Look at the digital technology that's sitting in this room. But as I mentioned in the main room, you know, my take on this is that your ability to do good mixes is not so much dependent upon that technology. It's dependent upon your ability to listen and interpret and understand how to present what is happening there. That technology, if it's anything more than just a means to the audio vision that is in your head, then something's out of whack. It just has to be a tool. You can't worship the tool. Okay? So it's all down to technique. It's down to listening. It's down to setting an expectation and being able to get to that expectation using one of these. So what does that all mean? That means we have to know how to operate the console. It can't be an impediment to us mixing the show. We're definitely in that mode right now, folks. Whether it's a church or it's a secular world, guys are so concentrated on operating the technology that they are forgetting to mix the event. Okay? So, you know, game one is certainly know your console. And there's no reason not to be able to get it in practice with it now. You know, with virtual sound checks and things like that, all the manufacturers are offering some version of virtual sound check now. You know, there's no reason you can't get in and practice. Even if it's just with a pair of control room monitors. Because I would say this to you, and I've seen this happen a lot. I've been privy to watch this happen. If you can't make a mix happen on a pair of control room monitors sitting around on your desk that sounds good and sounds produced, do you think you're ever going to do it through a PA system? I guarantee you, not a chance. Not a chance. I mean, that's been my take on it. It's what I teach in my workshops. You want to learn how to mix? Get in the studio and learn how to mix. And when you can make it happen out of a small set of speakers, then you've got a real shot at making it happen out here. Because I guarantee you, there's not one speaker system in the world that can take a badly mixed show and just magically make it sound better. Not going to happen. Not compared to one that's mixed well. Okay? All right, so where that's going to take us here, I'm not really sure. Let's just have a look at the list again. I guess I could take it down this way. You know, sorry, I didn't mean to step on that. You know, one of the things we can do, one of the really, really basic things we can do on our consoles, especially now in digital, is lay them out in a way that actually helps us navigate, helps us mix the event. Does that sound like something everybody would like? You know, release the complication a little bit. Okay, so let me close this down. I'm going to take us, and let's just talk about grouping and routing on a console. Let's go here. Go to this for a second. Some of you guys have seen this who have been in my workshops. Okay. You know, I got to start this with just a little bit of a diatribe here. For some reason, when we started switching over to digital consoles, we seemed to kind of lose the concept of grouping. I'm not exactly sure what drove this away. We seem to kind of, everybody just kind of seemed to land on, well, all we'll need is VCAs now. We don't need to do actual audio subgroups, meaning where a number of inputs are passing through an actual audio master. We've created a second master that is a subset of the main mix, right? As opposed to VCAs, which are essentially just, I think the best way to think of VCAs is they're remote controls for other faders. Okay, no audio is passing through them. If you have your remote control for your TV, is there audio passing through it? No, but I can adjust the volume, right? Okay? So we've seemed to have moved away from audio subgroups. And I really think some of this was driven, you know, there was a period of time in analog audio where everybody said, well, we want to get away from that summing bus. You know, there's something negative that happens to the audio in the summing bus. The cleaner the path, the better. Right? And it was, honestly, it was kind of a, kind of an old school mentality where, you know, console design through the 70s and early 80s was just iffy enough to make that kind of true, where we thought, let's bypass the subgroups, get our gain structure set, and use those. But as we went on, you know, console manufacturing got really, really good. We ended up, especially in live sound, ended up with some excellent sounding consoles. And as you'll see here, as I take you down this little path, you know, the trade-off of not using the groups versus using the groups became a bad trade-off in terms of your ability to mix and handle the event. So now, you know, we've kind of pushed back into it. Certainly I pushed back into it with XL4, a bunch of other Midas products, where, you know, subgrouping became an intricate part of my workflow. And what came as a byproduct of that, now that we've moved into the digital age, is how important they are going to be, because your live sound console is not only a mixer, it's also a path to a digital recorder. Right? Okay, so now we're not only mixing the event, but we're recording the event in multitrack, and you're going to see how these subgroups play into that very thing, because what's important in our digital consoles is we want to get good high bit resolution input levels. We don't want to be mixing off of the input gain, right? Setting our faders at zero and just turning up input gain until we get what we need, because that's going to negatively impact the multi-track recording. Okay? So let's just kind of go down this here and just see how it works. I'll have to do it here. So here's our goals of just kind of some of these grouping concepts. You want to get the console in a state where you can use more of your right brain and less of your left brain, right? We don't want to be thinking technically. We want to be thinking creatively. Right? We want to be thinking music presentation, not technical presentation. We also want to get the console in a state that allows you to be a proactive mixer, not reactive. By that, I mean you anticipate the part that is coming and can quickly get to the fader and make the necessary move. Right? Does that sound appetizing to everybody, especially with digital consoles that work with layers? Please don't get me lost, right? Get the console in a state where you can do tasks quickly and in a fluid manner. It's kind of related to that last one, certainly. And get the console in a state where you can mix as opposed to level manage. How many level managers have we got in the room today? Be honest. Come on. It's okay. Right. Hopefully we'll change your mindset on that here just a little bit. All right. So here is... The first thing I want to talk about is just laying out your inputs. Oh, it's a nice bow in the screen there. It's going to be awesome. We've got an ergonomically sound console here. So here's a... Oh, no, that's a rope. I see it. Okay. Audio guy, not that, you know, visual. All right, so for you guys in the back that can't really see this, I'm going to kind of explain what's going on here. I've got a stage plot up there that's got a band laid out on it. It's got some drama laid out on it, etc. This will be a stage plot you might see on the normal week to week. Sorry. And what I'm proposing here is that we consider how we are laying out our inputs. So if you look at our input here, it's kind of just your typical thing, right? A couple of kick drums, snare top, snare bottom, hi-hat, rack one, floor one, overhead left, overhead right, bass, guitars, you know, just your normal input list, right? But it doesn't really support what we're seeing visually. And if you make it support what you see visually, and you're looking up during the event, guess what? There's going to be some correlation to grabbing those faders. And we can do this very easily now in digital, right? With our soft scrambles, our soft patches, all right? So let's take a look at one that would be laid out like the stage. All right, so first thing I'm going to bring your attention to is that I've left the drums off to the left, which is okay. But what I've changed around is the tom-toms, the overheads, the ride cymbal, and the hi-hat mic. That's the first change. So if you look at that now, let's just start at the floor tom. Floor one is actually on the left. Rack one is on the right, just as it is on the kit. In terms of the cymbal group, it's ride cymbals, and I shouldn't use the word group here, but the cymbal mics, etc. Ride cymbal, overhead left, overhead right, hi-hat, exactly as it orients on the kit. Okay? Move on down the line. Look at what we have next. Guitar left, guitar right. Well, the guitar player is up in that upper left-hand corner, and those inputs are oriented just like he is sitting. Bass mic, that's the next amplifier next to the drum riser. Guitar center, that's the center, the worship leader's guitar mic. Piano left, piano right, as we work our way, stage left. Keys left, keys right, vocals, 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 laid out in the way that they are laid out there. Vocal left, vocal center, vocal right. Everybody getting the idea? So now let's consider even just some simple moves that all of a sudden really require just this much less slot. Tom-toms. If I want to actually pan those out, how do they pan now? This way, right? as opposed to when they were sitting the other way, when they were sitting where the rack top came first and the floor top came first, they went this way. I mean, that's completely counter to what you see, right? So this becomes really important if we're doing localized sound reinforcement, right? We want it to be able to support what we're seeing. And this is another better way to do it. But then we'll get some sense of maybe how wide the hand comes, right? Same thing with the ride cymbal overheads and hi-hats. Now, in terms of metering, we have those four inputs sitting right next to each other. We can see their relative balances as they work against each other. We can create some relative balances right on that little group of four faders. Does that make sense? I promise you, you remember what I said? It's a million small moves. Right? These are just little moves to help you be just that much better and that much quicker. Right? Same with the guitars, etc. I mean, I can get to a point, certainly on a digital console, where if I'm mixing the event, I can be looking up and I just know, okay, if the lap steel player is over here, I know his input is sitting right here. I don't have to go searching for it. Right? I've laid out the console that way. Okay, so that's one little move that you can do to make things go faster. You can kind of see the groupings here. Right, here's another version of it. So now, again, I've left the drum kit off to the left, but I've actually moved some of the drum effect processing right in line with the drums. So now you can see kick through hi-hat there, followed by a pair of drum reverb processors. And, you know, I've kept all the processing that I'm going to put in place right next to the instruments that I'm going to use it on. Again, so you can get some sense of balance. It's like I don't want to set, you know, kind of the drum levels and then have to go down a couple layers and move a couple more faders and then come back up and adjust it, you know, put them together. Work on them as composite groups. Okay, so that's one form of grouping that is just placement of the faders on the console. Okay, now the cool thing about this for our stage guys and our A1s that are going to be working on the stage to patch, they don't have to patch it this way. Gosh, don't tell a stage guy, okay, here's how we're going to patch it. We're going to start with a hi-hat, and then we're going to move, oh, they'll lose their minds, you know. It's kick, snare, hat, rack, floor, overhead, you know. Okay, you can stay on that. And we just soft patch it in the console. If you have an analog console and you want to take this approach, come to the back of the console and repatch it this way. Okay, don't mess up the stage patch. It's called a scramble. You have imparted a scramble on it now. And you'll need to stay in, you know, get a spreadsheet going and understand what you're doing. But if you want to move it around, you can do it. Okay? All right, so that's number one. So let's talk about audio subgroups here, actual audio subgroups. Does everybody understand the difference between audio subgroup and VCA? If you don't, please raise your hand. One, two, three. Okay, good. Because I was going to explain that anyway. Okay, so I've created a few audio subgroups here. And again, these are just subsets of the main mix, right? So you can see I got a drums audio subgroup, a bass guitar in its own audio subgroup, guitars, keys, backing vocals, lead vocals, and I think I got automation built into this. As I move a fader, right, what is happening is the drums are coming up and down. I can hear the drums as the composite moving in level to the left, right. Okay? And what is happening here is that all of those drum signals are being funneled to that fader and then to the left, right. Okay, so it actually has to pass through that fader. Okay, everybody understand that? And, you know, the positive ramifications of that are I can solo that group and hear input moves that I do on the inputs, right? I can solo that group on its own, and, you know, just to be able to hear the drums on their own. I can process that set of drums, as in this case, as a group. If I want to brighten the drum kit, boom up the drum kit, I'm going to do anything, dynamically enhance it, I can do it at the group level now, as opposed to doing it on the input side. Right? I can process as a group. All right, let's compare that to... Oh, well, let's just review that real quick, okay? Sure, go down this really quick. Mixed audio passes through the group. That's the important distinction here. Group audio can be processed with dynamics and equalization, just as we said. Relative balances can be reviewed by soloing a subgroup. And I don't want to let this one go without really emphasizing it. That is so important to be able to do that, to get some relative balances, especially if you're building a music mix, you know, a live sound mix, a full-blown every input through the PA mix, it's so important to be able to listen to it in chunks. Changing the group fader has no effect on the input fader value, okay, only on the effect of the group to the left-right. Great for gross adjustments of building of the building blocks of a mix. I was talking to some of the guys right after the original presentation in here, you know, about building mixes in live sound and, you know, kind of our agenda for going through it sometimes. And if you use subgroups for no other reason than this, I would suggest using them for this reason. You know, in this situation, you know, when we're building mixes, really what we want to do is, you know, if we're not focused on vocal presentation, if that's really not at the top of our agenda, I'm going to question what we're doing a little bit, right? I mean, people are here to hear and take in the word, okay? It's great that we have the lyrics up on the screen. How about we shoot a little higher and actually have them be able to understand that vocal coming out of the PA system, okay? So the idea behind this is, I start with the vocal. If I'm going to be building a mix, I start with the vocal and then starting adding in the block components of it, meaning the drums, the bass, the guitars, the keyboards, etc. But anything that starts to damage the presentation of that vocal or to compromise it, that's when I stop and go, okay, well, wait a minute here. Maybe the tonal aspects of that drum kit are messing with, you know, this, whatever. You know, then you start evaluating that way, as opposed to going the other direction, where you start building a mix with the music components and then somehow try to crowbar in a vocal over the top of it, right? Remember, in sound reinforcement, and live, especially in a live environment where we have open microphones, the level that you can get that microphone might be dictated by gain before feedback, right? How many times have we all done it? Build the drum mix, build the rhythm mix. Okay, add the guitars, add the keys. Okay, let's hear the vocals. Wait a minute. Right? It all kind of goes sideways at that point. So groups are a great way to stop that process and start with the vocals and then start adding in the group components, okay? And start addressing them accordingly. So let's move on to the next little topic, which is VCAs. I want you to really take note of the difference here. First thing you should take note of is that in the VCA groups there's no metering. Right? Why is that? Is there metering on your TV remote? No. Because these are just remote controls for the input faders. Right? Audio is not actually passing through that master fader. So as I move a fader up and down at the group side, it is essentially doing that. It is moving those faders up and down on the input side. Okay? Let's see it again just to make sure. As I move a master VCA, it's moving faders up and down on the input side. Now, what are the ramifications of this? Well, as I pull masters down, any aux buses that have post-fader information in them are going to come down as well, right? Okay, so you just got to understand the ramification, and it can actually mess with your gain structure a little bit if it's not handled really correctly. All right, and if I've seen anything, I think consistently, and we're going to talk about this over the next few minutes here, consistently over time, not only in the church world, but in the secular audio world too, is a misuse of these two styles of groups. You guys have a tendency to use VCA groups as audio subgroups in their mixing workflow, and then just not use audio subgroups. And my take on it is, man, you're giving away an awful lot of goodness by doing that, you know, and it's really not the best way to go about handling it. Let me see what I got next here. Yeah. And here's why. Here's the idea behind the VCA. If you guys can notice here, you know, this is a scaled fader on a master. I mean, it's the same on an input fader, etc. And if you'll notice, it's a logarithmic scale, meaning it's not linear. Okay? As I move the fader, if you guys can look up here, as I move the fader this much at the top of the scale, it may only impart 1 to 2 decibels of change. Down at the bottom of the throw, if I move it the same amount, it may impart as much as 20 dB of change. Okay? So the idea of the VCA, really, and this was the way it was kind of meant to operate, is that it allows you to have input faders that may be down in the lower resolution portion of their throw, If I assign them to a VCA that's sitting around zero, I can now manipulate their level in very high resolution. Okay? Whereas if I just went to the input side and I thought, you know, if I had faders down in the middle part of the fader, and I thought, I just want to take those down a little bit. Well, you may be imparting numerous dBs of changes there. It's hard to be high resolution there. Whereas if I just assign a VCA to it and leave it sitting around zero, I can impart very, very small changes on that group that is sitting down in the low res. Does that make sense to everybody? Good. Good. Because that's kind of the money move here. Because the answer really to your challenge here is that you can use both of these really, really effectively. Okay? So let's take a look at how that looks. Yeah, we'll do the review here just because we can. Audio does not pass through the group in a VCA. Changing the group fader does have a relative effect on the input fader value, right? It's a remote control for those input faders. And here's going to be the kicker that you're going to see here in a few minutes. Those VCAs can also be in control of output groups. They can be in control of subgroups as well. Okay? So think about that. You got a group in charge of a group. Okay? Not available for plug-in processing or any kind of external processing. We can't process a VCA. We can't plug in an equalizer on a VCA group. We can't do anything like that to process it. Okay? Soloing a VCA group to examine the relative balances and pans of inputs can only be done destructively, meaning in a solo-in-place model. Like if I want to hear the relative level of those inputs that are assigned to that VCA in terms of their pan, their fader position, etc., the only way I can do that is with solo-in-place. Does everybody know what solo-in-place is on a console? If you don't, please say so, because it's a very dangerous but very cool thing. What's that?
What is it?
Thank you, Matt. I think I'll tell them. Thank you for playing. Solo in place, it is a process that allows you to solo an input and have it be the only input coming out of the PA system. Right? So if you see that SIP button on your solo options, be careful. And usually they make it a little difficult for you to actually engage the console in that way. For a reason, right? But if you were to solo an input, that would be the only thing coming out of the PA. Hence, you would be hearing its pan position, its level, its fader position, everything. Okay? Everybody got me there? So great to use, but be careful with it. Yeah.
So VCAs cannot be stereo.
VCAs cannot be stereo in and of themselves because there is no path. Right? They can be in control of stereo inputs, right? Because they're a remote control for maybe a stereo fader. Follow me there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so everybody starting to see the difference there? All right, so what we can do now, and now that we know those two things, is we can actually use both of these things together. All right, and, you know, for my money, the only really analog console that really, really got this right was XL4, minus XL4. They were the first console that I saw that really got this concept right. So the idea being, I have a set of audio subgroups on the right there that are controlling the gross balances of those subsets, meaning that's my amount of drums that I want, that's my amount of bass that I want, that's my amount of all the other instruments relative to each other. I'm using those building blocks to make it sound like music, right? And then within those groups, I'm going to assign certain VCAs to key elements of it. If you notice on the left there, the first VCA fader is just assigned to the kick and snare, or those first two faders. So I could actually, with the move of one fader, control those levels. I can push them up for a feature. Maybe if it's kick and snare, maybe I got a little breakdown thing that's just kick and snare, and I want to push it up. Doesn't matter what layer it's on in your console, I have that fader sitting right in front of me. What else we got there? Tom-tom. So I got one VCA maybe that's just assigned to the tom-toms. Maybe there's a big tom-tom thing that happens in one song. I can manipulate it and ride it and accentuate it. You following it there? Okay, and the beautiful thing about VCAs is, especially on our digital consoles, is that we can program them song to song. So I can always have the key elements to whatever mix I'm trying to put on sitting right in front of me in those VCA masters. I don't have to go looking downstairs and other layers, any other parts of the console. I know that for this song, what I need is kick and snare for the breakdown. I need the mandolin. I need the lead vocal and the lead vocal effect. I need that in front of me, and I can mix this song. Maybe the next song, it's three or four completely different inputs. You following it? Okay. So who thinks you might actually, this might actually lend you to mixing the event as opposed to level managing it? I would sure hope so. Right. So your level management really happens at the audio groups. Right? That's where you're kind of setting and forgetting. And then you're mixing with VCAs. Now, here's the beauty of it. That we also have the ability to assign a VCA to an audio subgroup. So, what do you say we take one VCA and assign it to all the music subgroups, meaning drums, bass, keys, guitars, etc., everything but the vocals. We assign one VCA fader to be the master for that. And then another VCA fader for just the vocal groups, meaning lead vocal and backing vocals. All right? So what does that give us? We got two faders now that represent music and vocals. Okay? At this kind of move right here, this much movement, I've now made the vocal louder than the band. All vocals. Or vice versa. I've pushed the band up past the vocals. I can balance music to vocal in two fader rates. Okay? Who's buying it? It's huge. It's a huge advantage to have at your disposal. Because now you can be really dynamic with the mix, too. Right? Okay, I want to make the music a little louder for this little intro section and then pull it right back down and let the vocal happen. Wow. You've just created what would be termed as mix expansion. Music's up. Band's playing. All I got to do is pull the music back where it was. Now the vocal feels louder. Right? So again, it's learning how to operate your technology and then use it creatively, right? This is a great example of it. So here's a little example. That's me moving inputs with a VCA, right? There's our ride. There's our little Tom's ride that had to happen whenever we wanted it to. And then over here, now I've just moved band to vocals, right? Turn the band way down and push the vocals way up just in two fader moves. See those two center fader moves? By just having those two groups just in charge of the audio groups. Any questions on that? Sound pretty cool? It works. It works. You know, this also solves another problem that a lot of guys have. This actually came in, I just did a webinar last week, I think it was, and this was one of the first questions. We drive our subs on an aux, and we have a master left-right. But when we turn down the master left-right, the aux is still driving the subs. How do we handle that? Sure sounds to me like a VCA is the answer there, isn't it? If we had a VCA that was assigned to the aux master, and a VCA that was assigned to the left-right, if we turn down that VCA, both that aux master and the left-right are going to come down at the same time. Because they are. It is a remote control for both of those faders, right? Okay? I see a lot of nodding heads. I like that. Okay, so I'm going to give you maybe an audio example here of how this all works. And then we can, maybe once we get going here, we can actually build a little mix using this concept. Let me see what else I got here on the old palette. Yeah, so let's do it. Just so we can, you know, we paid for it. We might as well do it all. Allows the event to be mixed from a centralized location. To me, this is the most important aspect of this whole thing. You know, where you can sit at a VCA master section and do the entire show from there. You don't have to be searching around. I'll give you where it was with XL4 where I really kind of honed this process for my skill set was doing Rush. Where I had a pair of XL4s sitting side by side. I mean, the console was, you know, 12 feet wide. I mean, there was no way you were going to get down there to do, you know, the mini ride cymbal ride down here, you know. Ding, 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 ding. Back to the vocal. Hang on. You know, I mean, you just had to come up with some other way to do it, right? So, you know, VCAs were the answer there. And I actually, I mean, this was before any kind of digital labeling happened on the console. I literally took a notebook spine, a three-ring binder, and built a little flip chart that told me what VCAs were sitting in front of me song to song. So for this song, okay, it's going to be Neil's cowbells, it's going to be the little ride cymbal, the sample keyboards, Alex's guitar solo, and the whatever. next song, it's going to be the quad panner, you know, that little. And I was able to mix the entire event right from that, right from an 8-fader wide section, you know. Now, that's not to say you didn't have to go down and work on equalization and other things like that. You still have to do that. But in terms of staying kind of in the moment and mixing the event, you know, you don't want to have to be going all over the place. Take advantage of the technology and let it help you do it. And it takes time to program it. You got to want it. And I kind of alluded to this in the main session. You know, this seems to be our challenge sometimes with audio in the church environment, is that we don't seem to want to take the time to do these styles of things. Well, this is what worked last week, or this is how so-and-so set it up, so that's how I'm going to set it up. Or let's just assign everything to the left, right, and go. You're just not using the technology to its potential. And you're, honestly, you're not reaching your potential as a mixer either by doing that. Okay? All right, so let's switch over here. I'll give you an example here. I mean, this will be a good example because it's so simple, but yet it still employs this technique. I'm going to be a video guy for a second. Hang on a second. That's not like that. So wish Matt Wilkerson was here right now. Let's see. All right, so this is... I think I got the ratio of followers here. Let me just check. Not yesterday, but the night before last, I was in Hollywood doing an Oscar party with Rob Thomas, and I just tracked a bunch of stuff. And I thought this actually would be a good way to show this because it's so simple. It was a three-piece band. It was just Rob and two other players, but, you know, multiple different instruments. And, you know, I think it's a great example of where it would be really easy just to bail out and go, well, let's just assign everything to the left, right, and just mix off the input layers. You could absolutely do it. But I would submit to you that the show and the event was really well served. My efforts were well served by trying to do this with groups and with VCAs. So let's take a look at what I got laid out here just to give you the rundown. So, actually, I'll do it on the input side first so you can see that. Let's go to the patch bell and let me see the inputs. So we have a lap steel. We have an acoustic guitar that's on the stage right player. We have an acoustic guitar for the stage left player. We have an electric guitar for the stage left player. And we have a vocalist on the stage right, a vocalist stage left. Then we have Rob's vocal. We have a Rob acoustic. We have a piano vocal. We have a piano. And that's going to be it. So, like I said, not a ton of instruments. But there's a couple of things we could address here. Let's look at the layout of the faders. All right, so lap steel, mat acoustic, that's his two primary instruments that are stage right. Notice where they're going to lay out. They're going to be right here. Oops. Look at the, that's going to be hard to read there, I'll just do it this way. So that's mat acoustic. That's the lap steel, mat acoustic. Frank, you know, so they're going to lay out on this console just like they lay out on stage. And notice I have some instrument reverb here that's sitting right next to those instruments so I can get some sense of the blend. Then we have Matt's vocal, Frank's vocal, which are backing vocals, and I have some BB space there. I also have some BB pitch change. And then right next to that I have Rob's vocal, Rob's acoustic, and also some delay processing and some effects processing. All right there together so I can really intricately or intimately work on those blends. And then the piano and the piano space. All right, so that's just about all of the inputs in total. So that's all we have to mix for this thing. But I'm still going to use the same process. Okay, so let's take a look at the outputs now and how we got that set up. All right, so in terms of subgroups, I have an instruments subgroup, and then I have a Rob instruments subgroup, backing vocal subgroup, and a Rob vocal subgroup. Okay. Now keep in mind, in these groups, like for Rob's vocal as an example, the other things I have in there are his effects processing. I have his delay, reverb, if there are pitch change, those are assigned to that group. Now what does that give me the ability to do? Solo that subgroup and work on the balance of vocal to effects processing in and of themselves before I present them to the mix. Okay? Everybody get that? Okay. Same thing for the backing vocals. I have a backing vocal space set up, backing vocal pitch. It's going to allow me to solo up that group, that subset, listen to the backing vocals with their effects processing, and get it placed in my listening environment, my headphones, right, before I present it to the VA. Who thinks that would, in and of itself might be a cool advantage? Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. All right, so here's my groups. So I'm going to use that basically just to set the rough levels, the blends of vocal to instruments to raw instruments, you know, just the gross blends, right? And then once I'm done there, I'm going to move to VCAs and check out what I've got in terms of VCAs here. I've got a VCA that is matte. And this is usually the way I, you know, in VCA land, especially if I'm working with a band per se, this is kind of how I like to think sometimes, with a few exceptions at times, where I think player, not input. So by matte, if you look on the upper right-hand side there, you'll see the instruments that are assigned to that VCA. Matt's lap steel, Matt's acoustic, and the piano. So I have one fader to control all of those things. Now, why do I do that? Because I just want to know that it's Matt. He can't play all of them at the same time. He could try. He'd be very good. Actually, he's good. He probably could pull it off. But
what happens if he sings at the same time?
Then I'm going to have one for his vocal. I'm going to have a VCA for his vocal. Right? And which you'll see here. All right, so you get me? So I'm thinking player here. So that's Matt. Here's Frank. And I got Frank's acoustic and Frank's guitar. Again, he can't play them both at the same time, right? So I can have a fader that is Frank and Matt. Okay? Next one, backing vocals. There's the two backing vocals. Next one, Rob's acoustic. I have one VCA that's just for that. I don't have to find it in here. It's sitting right here. We move on down. I got a blank spot here. And then I got Rob's delay, Rob's reverb, and Rob's vocal. Okay? Delay, verb, and Rob's vocal. All right, so, you know, I can mix that entire event, and I know it's a small event, but I can mix that entire thing sitting right in front of those VCA masters.
Question?
Yeah.
Well, the Rob vocal I split into,
just really because, you know, I mean, his vocal is going to be such a featured piece of this presentation. It's like, there are going to be times I'm going to want to ride that delay. There might be lines that I want to ride the reverb up on, and I want to have it sitting right here so that I can do that. I don't want to have to be kind of going, okay, where is it? You know, it just, you know, it's very hard to stay kind of in the moment and listen and make those kind of moves in the context that they need to be made, and you can do that if you want. Or, yeah, I mean, you know, if you want to have those all sitting right here, I mean, I got them sitting right here on the input there, too. You could certainly do it here. But on a big show where you might have more than one or two layers, you know, that stuff might be sitting downstairs somewhere, et cetera. You know, the VCA doesn't care where it's at. Okay, so let's see what we got here.
Well, she got out.
So, you kind of get the idea there? I mean, I know it's a little coarse there, you know, but the idea is to treat those things as independent groups, and then mix on the VCA layer. So we'll take you through it here, Pat. I got one other thing I want to show you on the VCA side of it. There's actually a piece of the bridge here that is supposed to have, you know, some pretty pronounced slap on his vocal. So, you know, that would be a good place for you to take that VCA control of that delay and run it up and blend it in right there so you can make that move, right? I mean, you know, you got to, you know, to some degree, you got to help him out here a little bit. Right? I mean, it's pretty exposed. I mean, it's a vocal, an acoustic, and a lap steel. I mean, you know, it's not that we need to over-process it or overproduce it, but let's do something to make it interesting, right? And certainly, I mean, you kind of got a sense of it there. Certainly one of the things you can do there, even though it's only three instruments, is not necessarily mix it in mono, right? Let's push the lap steel out a little bit. Let's push the guitar out a little bit. They don't have to be wide left and right. Just, I call it wide mono. Right, just get it off of the center so we got some space for things to happen vocally. Right? I mean, I mean, we can go down this rabbit hole if you want here, you know. I mean, in terms of drum processing, et cetera, you know. How many of you guys just, without question, if you're on a stereo PA system, just pan out your toms left and right? Does it visually support what you're seeing? It really doesn't more often than not. And here's the irony of it. If you really dig in on a lot of contemporary music that's produced today, the drums are not wide. What's wide? The guitars. The drums are essentially mono. I mean, they're very narrow. I mean, you wouldn't see tom-toms probably past that. You know, you're not going to see this, that's for sure. You know, and for me, when I go hear shows, it always feels really disjointed for me. If I see a drum kit that visually is about that wide, but the tom-toms go boom, 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 boom. It's like, wait a minute, boom, boom. I mean, it's disorienting to me, you know. So, you know, don't be afraid to use stereo. And, you know, you guys are going to be challenged with this. It's another kind of thing we run into in a lot of church installs. I've seen so many places that do this, and I'm so trying to dissuade them from doing it, where they'll put up, you know, let's say they have zoned PA, and it'll make it go left, right, left, and right on the outside. And I'm guessing the agenda is to give stereo imaging to three sections of people, I guess. I don't know what it is. You know, it would be reverse stereo imaging over here. And really, you know, think about this now. Dig in. Is that supporting anything you see visually? I guarantee you it's not. Acoustically, it's mono. Right? If I'm standing here and I got a PA system that goes left, right, and I pan something to the right, where is my attention drawn? It's mono. And I, for the life of me, I can't figure out why people would do it other than kind of overanalyzing it and thinking, well, for the person that's sitting over here, if there's something pan hard left, they're not going to hear it, you know. Well, why would you pan it hard left is the question. You know, don't. But you need some stereo width on it so that you don't have to layer everything vertically, right? I got a vocal on top of a guitar, on top of a lap steel, on top of whatever. Then the pressure is really on, in terms of spectral balance, to get those things to read. Whereas if you were able to just move them just slightly off center and space them out a little horizontally, they become much, much easier to read. And believe me, this person that's on this side of the room, if you've got the person that's on that side of the stage panned a little bit to that left, it's going to make sense to them. It'll make sense to them. All of a sudden they'll be like, wow, that's that guitar player over there. Not that's, I don't know who's playing that guitar part. Where is it? No. Right? So that, you know, we kind of get in that zone of being in both worlds. Is it sound reinforcement or is it live sound mixing? Well, it's a little bit of a hybrid, right? But man, don't be afraid of using panning here. Panning's a friend. Just be careful with it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with panning something way, way out, wide, and left if you need it for effect. Okay? So don't worry about it. You know, you just keep it. That's the name right there. Keep it in there. Keep it in the room. All right. So let's take a look at this song here. Let's see what we got. Okay. So what I'm going to try to show to you here is, you know, there's, it just kind of give you a sense of how much movement can take place here. You're just doing something simple like this, all right? I'll give you the routing that we have it set up here right now. It's not optimized for what I'm doing, but you'll get the point. One of the things I like to do processing-wise, especially on a vocal or even an acoustic guitar, etc., even though it comes across as relatively dry, is put very short and very tight spaces on it. And you can do that with some slap delay that's in tempo and some short room or plate or whatever you want to use on it, whatever mode you want to go to. But typically what I'll do is take that delay and send it only to the reverb. All right, so you got a vocal, a little bit of delay, and then the delay going to the reverb, right? And what that gives you the ability to do, certainly in a reverberant space, is keep the vocal front and center without it getting too wet, right? And it's just a little bit of a delicate balance between getting that delay sitting right to create just a little bit of space, and then the reverb on top of it create a little bit of wetness. Okay, so I'll let you hear that first, and then I'll show you the move that we're probably going to have to do here. Although, like I said, I would probably optimize it. So, the reason I bring this up is because You know, even if you're trying to create stuff that is relatively dry sounding and you hear stuff on record that you want to emulate, chances are it's not dry. Okay? It actually just has some very, very controlled choices of what you stick around it. And you'll notice as I start to pull this up and build this out, there's actually space on those acoustics, there's space on the lap steel, but it's subtle. It doesn't have to overwhelm it. It just has to give it some sense of interesting, right? And, you know, more often than not, if I see one consistent, I'll call it a mistake, but kind of a mistake in judgment by guys that are trying to do effects processing, is they overuse it or apply the wrong amount of it in terms of the spatial content to it. They'll go from, just pull up a preset on an effects processor, and it'll be like, oh, wow, man, I'm just swimming in it here. We don't need to do that. They just put it in some space and let it breathe. Some little bit of ambience on a close mic. Because let's compare it to what we do in the studio, right, if we're recording records. Especially today's records that are compressed as much as they are. All right, if I have a microphone that's sitting close to an instrument and we're recording that, and we compress it down very heavily, what are we essentially doing to that signal? Right? We're bringing in all this spatial element around and making it just about as loud as the source itself. Remember compression, right? Raises the average level. Okay, so it's going to take the things that are the lowest in level and bring them up to the middle. Things that are the highest in level, bring them to the middle as well. It's going to average those things out. It's going to bring up the highest average level. So whether even if we're close miking in the studio, if there's lots of compression being used, you're actually hearing the space on there as well. Right. So, certainly nothing more true than that for drums. Okay, drums are definitely that guy. If you were to just listen to a record that had its space taken off of it, it would be infinitely uninteresting. If it was, especially if it was just close mic'd. And I see this a lot. I got to be honest with you. I see this a lot in the approach that's being used in churches where guys will start with the close mics. They'll bring up the kit, bring up the snare, bring up maybe the cymbal mics. And you get this, and not put any space on it, not put any ambience, anything on it, and just have it come out and expect it to sound produced, and it's not. You know, it sounds not interesting. Matter of fact, maybe the next thing we'll do here once I get off this is just go build a drum mix, and I can kind of show you what I'm talking about. Does that sound cool?
Yes.
All right, so let's finish up here real quick. So let's get a sense of how much this move is going to need to take place. I'll also give you a sense of the instruments and how much space is being used on them. Yeah.
She got.
Game time's kind of over, but it's totally cool if you want to keep going.
Yes.
Keep going.
Well, it's 4:45. Okay. Oh, easy now.
You keep going. If people need to leave, fine. But just keep going.
What time's your flight tomorrow? Well, let me just do this real quick, and then we'll jump into this other drum example, because I know that's always interesting to build those. Let's get this going.
Some things you don't see.
So you get the idea, right? I mean, you can write it. You know, you can make it emotional. I mean, obviously, that's just thrown together there, but we could really refine that and get it happening if we wanted to do it. I mean, obviously, tonally is a little not great for this PA, but we wanted to work on it good. But the thing I want to get across to you and plant in your mind to start thinking about is those faders move for a reason. As the little purple from Minneapolis once said to me, those faders go up, too. Turn it up, dude. Me and the little purple guy, we got along famously. It's awesome. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. Try to get inside that music. Get the operation of your console sorted out so that you can just get into small places and make those moves and be musical.